Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Last week, the week before Mother's Day, we started a study here in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, focusing on that question of what is the meaning in life? Is there any meaning at all in all that we do? And Solomon, after he had just about everything that anyone in this world could ever want as far as a human being goes, and the way that human beings think, what is important and what really makes a life worth living. You know, he came to that point at the end of his life and it was just worthless. It was all vanity. And, outside of Christ, if that's the only thing that's important to you in life, are what we'll see tonight as he continues on in chapter 2 is the pleasures of this life and what the things that you do and the things wrought by your hands and the things that are around you, then if that's it, if that's all there is, then we are going to be sorely disappointed. And life means so much more than that. And finding meaning in the worth that Christ has given us and who we are in Him and His love for us and what He wants to do through us to impact others' lives and really seeing other people's lives change and impacted for Christ. And that's where real meaning is found, finding that worth in Christ and doing what He has called us to do here on this earth. And tonight, as we look at chapter 2, he continues this thought, going in a little bit of a different direction, focusing on the problem with pleasure. And the idea is kind of, you know, I've been there, done that, now what? Because that's what happens in our life. The more and more you do, and more pleasure that you seek, you do and you do and you do, and you're just never satisfied. Been there, done that, what else is there? What else have you got for me? And that's one of the problems with pleasure. You know, you look at people that are looking for that thrill in life, those thrill seekers. I think of those bungee jumpers, you know, who get out there and they strap that cord to their ankle or to their feet. I was one of those at one time. I did it. When was it? I was on my honeymoon of all times. On my honeymoon, Nadia said, "What, you just ready to give up on life that quick?" I was definitely, and I still, to some point, I've lost a lot of that, you know, with age and having kids. You know, you have kids and that kind of puts a perspective on things too. And some of that thrill seeking starts to go out the window when you have kids and you start living for them instead of yourself, you know. And, but I did some of those thrill seeking things, but you know, those bungee jumpers, they have that experience and so many other thrill seeking things where you get that rush of adrenaline and that excitement, and it makes you, you know, it just gives you that thrill, especially with those things which are a controlled near-death experience. You know, you know, as far as you can tell, you know, there's the accidents, but as far as you can tell, there's not that many people that are dying from it. And, you know, that near-death experience just pushes you to the edge and pushes that adrenaline through your veins, and that's what those thrill seekers are looking for. That rush, that pleasure that they can only get through that adrenaline rush that they feel. But here's the point though, is there's always, you know, after they jump and they bounce back and forth, you know, they bounce back up and then they fall again. But when they finally come to a stop, they're just left dangling. They're just left dangling, hanging at the end of a cord, waiting for something to happen. Somebody please pull me up. Somebody please get me out of here. And it's funny how many things, you know, when you're in the moment, it feels great for a moment, but when you get to the end, it just doesn't feel as good as it did when you were in the moment, you know. I remember back, this is several years ago, this is going back, oh man. Well, I guess it's 16 years ago, because it was right when Hudson was born. I went skydiving with Buck Allbritton. I got up in a plane with Buck Allbritton. And remember Bobby Walker. Remember Bobby? Went with Bobby. I got up in a plane with those guys. And there was somebody else with us, but I cannot remember. And we went skydiving. And when we jumped out, and this is what it just blew me away. You know, of course you have that adrenaline rush and you have that thrill. But when you jump out of a plane, it's really, really different than bungee jumping. See, bungee jumping, I could care less if I ever do it again. When you bungee jump, you have that feeling, I am falling. I could die. And you see all the stuff flying by you, and you have that feeling in your heart that, you know, I am falling right now. But when you skydive, it's totally different. You jump out of that plane, and when you first jump out, you get that feeling. Your stomach kind of drops, and you have that feeling just for a second that you're falling. But when you reach what they call terminal velocity, where you can't go any faster, you're just falling as fast as you can fall, it literally feels like you're flying. You have no sense at all that you're falling. Except, I mean, you have that rush of air in your face because you are falling, and you're falling very, very fast. But you don't know it. Your body's, it's almost been tricked into thinking that you're literally flying, and you're up there, and they're doing all these motions and bringing you around and in circles and all this kind of stuff. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. And for a while, for about, I guess, about 7,000 feet, you feel like you're flying, but the closer you get to the ground, all of a sudden that ground starts coming a whole lot quicker, and that your mind kicks back into gear and you realize, I'm falling. And something changes, and what was so good and what was so fun, all of a sudden you're thinking, somebody, you gotta pull that chute. You gotta slow us down. And your reality sets back in. It was fun in the moment, but okay, now the game's over and you need to pull that chute back to reality. And so many of life's, if you want to say those adrenaline moments, those exciting moments, those moments which we would look at as just pleasure and fun, and people live for those moments, but when they're done, you're left just kind of like that bungee jumper, you're left dangling. You're left just like, okay, it's done. It's time to get back to reality. And that feeling and that joy and that pleasure all of a sudden isn't the same anymore. Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, he made a statement one time. He said, everybody's looking for good love, good food, good laugh. They're little islands of relief in what often is a painful existence. People on a pleasure safari soon discover that it takes a bigger thrill and a higher rush to satisfy their senses. In time, their pursuits get them nowhere. And that's what Solomon found out. Solomon found out you live for pleasure, and pleasure is great in the moment. But the more pleasure you have, you always get back to reality, and then you're back into the pursuit of looking for more pleasure. Because you want to have that feeling, you want to have that rush, and it doesn't last forever. And so constantly I'm looking for that pleasure, I'm striving for it, I want it, but it always leads me to the same place, nowhere. And Solomon was back to the same point he was in chapter 1. It's just all vanity. Nothing is filling this void in my life. Look at chapter 2 in verse 1. It says, I said in my heart, go to now. I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in my heart to give up, to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life? He's just looking for that happiness. He's looking for something to make it all mean something. We know, what's it all mean for men? What's really making them live here on this life? What's life worth living for? I made my great works. I built my houses. I planted my vineyards. I made my gardens and orchards. And I planted trees in them and all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. And I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and all the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever my minds desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked at all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. He's back to this exactly where he started in chapter 1. He's trying outside of God to find not just the meaning, but now pleasure, happiness, something that my heart can rejoice in, something that will give me a lasting joy and happiness. Perhaps there was no one more qualified than Solomon to explore the endless pursuit of happiness. I mean, he, not only did he have, you know, all of the possessions, but he had everything that anyone could think there would be pleasure in. He had it all. I mean, he makes this list, and I tried to kind of read it almost all in one breath, and I was about out of breath by the time I read it. There's just so much stuff that he had acquired and so much that he was looking to find pleasure in. Something that he could find that would give pleasure to his heart, as he put it. But he wind up just being disgruntled. He winded up without happiness. He had taken the jump, pursued the thrills, and just like that bungee jumper we talked about, he was left dangling. That's where we find Solomon now. But here he gives us some real points, some key things to look at. And these are great things to be able to share with people. And maybe some of us there are people, and can't put it past Christians. I mean, Solomon, one of the wisest, he is the wisest man who has ever lived, given that wisdom outside of Jesus Christ living on this earth, given that wisdom directly from God. But he and his great wisdom still fell into this trap. He still fell into this trap. You know, he said, in the midst of all of this, did you catch that statement he made? In the midst of all this pursuit, yet my wisdom was with me. And he still made those bad choices. And so we can't put it past anyone. We can't put it past ourselves for sure that we would someday find ourselves, or maybe we find ourselves now, in this pursuit of just trying to be happy, trying to find pleasure in this life. And he leaves us here some great first characteristics and then consequences and then causes of the pleasure-seeking life. First, some characteristics of the pleasure-seeking life. What are some of the signs and indications that we or someone we know might be seeking pleasure to find meaning in life? Solomon journaled some of those things in his life here. Number one, a pleasure-seeking life is abnormally busy. Because those who are seeking for pleasure, with everything they can do, every moment that they have, every spare second, they are seeking for that one thing or multiple things to give them the joy and happiness in their life. If you look at verse 4 first and then verse 11, put those two together, he says these things that he was doing to find pleasure. And this is a mouthful. I made me great works. I builded my houses. I planted vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees and all of them. And he goes on and on, all those things, the pools of water, the servants, the maidservants, all these things that he was getting unto himself. And then you come down in verse 11. Then I looked on all those works, all that my hands had wrought, and all the labor that I labored to do, all of these things that he had spent a life doing to get pleasure. And he came to the end, and it was vanity. He had spent so much time. He had wasted so much time. And boy, he was busy. Imagine the amount of time that it took to do all of these things and to accumulate all of these things. He had spent a lifetime doing all of these things. And busyness in itself, there's nothing wrong with being busy. You know, it's one thing for me, it keeps me out of trouble. You know, I try to stay busy because it keeps me out of trouble. But again, you got to remember, and we talked about this a little bit 2 weeks ago, there's a difference in needs and greeds. You know, there's a difference in being busy and working hard in order to provide for our needs, provide for our family, the things that we need to do. But it's a whole different thing when it's just desires, and many of them selfish desires that we have, and those greeds that we have, and we spend every waking hour trying to fulfill and pursue those things far and beyond what our needs are in our life. There's a big difference between those two things, between needs and greeds. And so in itself, busyness is not wrong. But the pleasure-prone people are so busy that it causes them to neglect relationships with spouse, family, friends. Causes them to neglect the relationship with God because they're in that constant pursuit of things. And those things are the most important to us. And so our relationships suffer. A relationship with a husband or a wife. The time that we spend with our children or our grandchildren. The time that we spend with God. Those relationships, those things become less important and take a back seat to those desires and those pleasures, those things that we think will make us happy. That's where the busyness becomes wrong. That's where the busyness becomes a sin. That's where the busyness takes over our life. And as a result, as we said, they strain, give every waking minute to those things, to those projects, you know, burning a candle at both ends. Sometimes we have to burn a candle at both ends when we're talking about providing for our family. Sometimes there's just no way around that. You know, I know people, bless her heart, Nadia's mom, when they were young, and it had nothing to do with greeds, just to provide as a single mom for her family. She worked 3 jobs. And boy, you want to talk about running herself ragged and burning the candle at both ends. She didn't do it because she wanted to, by far. She did it because she had to, because she was providing for her kids. And you know, when she, before she got sick, even before she got sick with cancer, to look at her because of the life she had lived and the hours that she had put in and working so hard, to look at her when she was in her 50s, you'd have thought she was in her 70s because she had just put so many years on her body because of how hard she had worked. That's different than this type of person who is just being busy because I want, and nothing else is important to me. Many times a pleasure-seeking person will operate on the precept that a reputation for busyness is a sign of success and personal importance. Boy, that's exactly where Solomon found himself. Solomon fell into that trap, and he thought that this was what was going to bring meaning. This is what was going to bring success and personal importance. And when he came to the end of his life, it was all vanity. His spirit was vexed because he found out, I'm lost. All of this means nothing in itself. And the pleasure-seeking person can fall into that trap of really, it's a song. It was very popular several years ago. I'm pretty sure it came out before I was born. I'm pretty sure. Remember that the song, The Cat's in the Cradle? So popular for so long. But the message of this song, this is the message that song was portraying. You know, this dad, this businessman that was so caught up in his gain and his worth and working, and he's got his little son there who all he wants to do is spend time with his dad. And his dad says, you know, later, you know, I'll be home, son, soon. We'll get together then. And he just keeps putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And then soon, the time came and his son's gone. And now the song reverses. And, you know, his son, who in life as a youngster, all he wanted to do was be just like dad. And that's exactly what happened. At the conclusion of the song, he became just like dad. He didn't have any time for his dad. He didn't have any time for his family. He had become just like his dad. And that pursuit of gain and that pursuit of pleasure, we've got to understand that it doesn't just affect our life. It doesn't just affect us. While we may come to the end of our life and we may come to the same conclusion as Solomon and say, you know, this was all vanity. But how many other lives have we impacted by that lifestyle and that search? And how many lives have we hurt, and possibly how many relationships have we destroyed because things and the pursuit of those things was so much more important to us? A pleasure-seeking life is abnormally busy. A pleasure-seeking life is gratified only by the accomplishment and the symbols of triumph. Look at verse 9. He said, "So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me." When he came to it, you know, that's really what it was all about. It was about him increasing and being greater than anyone else. That's what was important to Solomon. That's what his real, though he was looking for pleasure and he was looking for meaning in life, when it came down to it, he really put it into perspective here in verse 9, because that's what he really wanted. He wanted to be greater than anyone else, and his pleasure and his meaning in life, where it really found its gratification, where it really, what it all came down to, was the accomplishment and the symbols in his life of triumph. Am I greater than anyone else? Do I have more than anyone else? That's what is most important. And the pleasure-seeking life, you know, no matter what it may be, whether it's seeking pleasure in things, in physical things, or whether it's seeking that pleasure in just the feeling and emotion that I get from the things that I'm searching for, no matter what it is, it's those symbols that we can connect the things to, the whether it's those things or whether it's those emotions and feelings, that really is what I'm looking for. It's not really that thing. It's not really the sport. It's not really whatever that is. It's what I can hang, the medal I can hang on it. The thing that I can draw attention to my life. The thing that I can really point to and say, that's it. That's the thing. That's the thing that brings it all together. That's what I'm looking for. That's what really is showing my accomplishment, who I am, what I've done. The problem is you come to the end, where are all those things? You know, the athlete that points to his accomplishments and says, that's it. All of a sudden he gets older and he can barely walk anymore. What's that trophy mean then? What's the trophy mean when he's lying in a bed? He can't get up anymore. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, I spent so much of my life seeking that trophy and seeking that fame and that fortune, and it's gone. It doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, life's got to be more than that. Life's got to be more than trophies. Life's got to be more than adrenaline. Life's got to be more than things. And that's what Solomon was searching for in chapter 1. And now he comes into chapter 2 and he's moved on from meaning of life. And now it's in the pleasures. Well, maybe I can find it in pleasures. I can't get the answer to meaning in life. So maybe I can really make it mean something by searching for these treasures. Maybe I can hang something on that. But the symbols of triumph he found weren't enough either. The pleasure-seeking life is unordered, often is unordered and undisciplined. You look in verse 10, and he says, "And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from joy, from any joy. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was the portion of my labor." Solomon couldn't say no. He couldn't say no. Whatever it was, whatever would bring my heart joy, whatever was out there, that's what he was going after. It didn't matter if there was other things that needed to be done. It didn't matter. It was all out of order. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, if that's all that there was in life, just the pleasures that you want, the things you were seeking for, and you put everything else on the back burner to those things, I mean, well, what about the food you eat? What about the family that you provide for? What about your relationships? What about all these other things? That's completely out of order. That's completely backwards. But that's what the true pleasure-seeking person, that's how they live their life. It's out of order. The priorities, the important things in life, the things that really matter, take a back seat to your desires and your pleasure that you're seeking for. Solomon couldn't say no. He operated according to the maxim, if it feels good, do it. And that is a life that is completely out of control, unordered, and undisciplined. They're out of control because they lack discipline. That's why they're out of control. They don't have the discipline to say no. That you don't have the discipline to say, this is more important. No, what's more important is what I want and what I desire. And that is where the discipline is lacking. Life contains no order. Whims dictate their actions. They avoid discipline like the plague. Why? Because if I'm disciplined, I'm not going to get what I desire. And so the pleasure-seeking life is unordered and undisciplined. Now, these are characteristics. Characteristics. The pleasure-seeking life is abnormally busy. The pleasure-seeking life is gratified only by accomplishment and the symbols of triumph. The pleasure-seeking life is unordered and undisciplined. And those characteristics lead to consequences in life. The consequences of the pleasure-seeking life. In verse 11, he came to the end and he said, "Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and all the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." It's a pretty sad consequence. A pretty sad epitaph to the end of his life. He exclaimed, he examined his life. He examined his situation. He looked at his life, his stuff, his clutter, all the things that he had done, all the things that he had acquired, and he observed. Verse 11. Again, he said it once again, as he said in chapter 1, there is no profit. It's not worth anything. Revealed in his pitiful summation of all that he had done is the true consequence of a pleasure-seeking life. There's no worth. There's no meaning. If that's all there is, if that's all that you've put everything that you have upon, there is nothing. There is no profit. Like alcoholics and the disease that they face in alcoholism, the pleasure-seeking life becomes engulfed by a disease, if you want to call it consumeralism. Consumer, just getting stuff, consuming stuff, getting stuff, living for those things. And in life, their life is a constant pursuit of possessions and things. They work to buy more stuff. They buy more stuff, and the house that they have is not big enough to get all their stuff, so now they got to get a bigger house to hold all the stuff that they've got, and it's constant. It just goes on and on and on, and there's no end to it. You know, we couldn't function, really, if you're honest, we couldn't function without belongings in our life. You know, that's just how our life is. You've got to have some things to function in life. You've got to have, you know, clothes and the life in which you live. You know, maybe in some cities you could live, you know, a big city, you could live without a car. But in most places, you got to have a car to get around and get to the places you need to go and get the things you need to get. You know, we're not talking about that you can't have anything in your life. You can't have possessions, that you can't have material goods. This is the problem. The problem is the excessive desire and the inner compulsion where these things are the things that drive you, the undisciplined craving and the result of an addiction for these things in your life. The demise does not begin with having possessions, but rather with the possessions having you. And that's where the loss of control comes in. And it really does, for the pleasure-seeking person, it becomes an addiction of more, 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 more. And that's the exact thing that you see lined out here in chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. Solomon begins, and it becomes a routine. It becomes more, 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 more stuff. More, 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 more time. Until he finally comes to the end and he finally realizes that it was nothing. It's something that's known if you want to put a title on it, it's something known as hedonism. Hedonism is the view that pleasure and a lack of pain is all there is to a happy life. A secular magazine, Psychology Today, points out the danger in this type of life. And there's three things that they said about it. They said, one, if you are a pleasure-seeking person and you think that pleasure is all there is to a happy life, number one, you'll be a fair-weather everything. If you think that pleasure is all there is to happiness, then the people and projects in your life promote your happiness only insofar as they give you pleasure. And that is so sad. Because basically, you become a user. You are using everything and everyone for your own personal happiness. And as soon as something or someone doesn't bring you happiness, they're discarded. Wow, what a danger. Number two, you'll be unhappy when your unrealistic expectations about happiness are dashed. And they will be. Number three, the hedonist recommends a life you really don't want. And this one you have to really think about. Suppose you could set your emotional system to maximum pleasure for the rest of your natural life. No matter what challenges you face, your normal everyday level of pleasure wouldn't be good. It would be ecstatic. For the hedonist, that would be a great thing. Your life would be maximally happy. But reflect a bit and you'll see that the hedonist is wrong. You'll feel happy, but you won't really be happy. Why? Because in our life, and it's the way God has created us, it's the downs that really make us appreciate the ups. And when you really have no way to measure that, you have this feeling, but that's all it is. It's not real. And at one point in your life, you're going to come to that point in your life where something or someone is finally going to test that feeling. And something's going to happen, and all of a sudden that high feeling that you've got is going to be just torn down. And how are you going to handle it? The sad truth is that with many, many that fall into this category, they come to this moment just like Solomon, and they realize it's all been for nothing. And the life ends tragically. By one means or another. Or they just totally give up on life and they slowly just fall apart. Or we see things that have happened like we see in and around our society. Things that have happened in schools and churches. Not all of those are due because of kids being bullied. Some of those are people who have come in their life and their life is just meaningless. And they feel that life is just not worth living. And so they go out and do tragic, tragic things. Because it's just not worth it anymore. This is a consequence of seeking pleasure above all things in life. Lastly, we'll end with this. What's the cause of the pleasure-seeking life? The heart of pleasure-seeking of a pleasure-seeking person reveals the reason for such futility. If you look at who they really are, the cause may not be apparent at first, but a thorough examination will make it very, very clear. If you look at verses 1 through 11, this is something, this jumped out at me. And this was pointed out to me, and I went back and looked at it, and I said, wow. If you look at verses 1 through 11, I counted this, and hopefully my counting is not wrong, but I just counted just verses 1 through 11. 20 times Solomon uses the pronoun I. 22 times he uses the variation of me, mine, or myself. So a reference of 42 times he refers to himself. And if you were to read through this, it's something else. If you actually look at it in this way and you don't read anything else, I'll kind of do my best. Starting in verse 1. I, mine, I, me, I, me, I, me, I want to stop there. It just goes on and on and on. And it's no different than chapter 1. If you go back to chapter 1, Solomon was writing in the exact same way. You go on from verse 11 in chapter 2, he just goes on and on and on. It was all about him. I, me, mine, myself. Everything was about him. Ego filled his heart. The big I controlled everything in his life. He had pushed God out. He had pushed God's purpose for his life out. And it was all about what he wanted. I know Dad he had no idea what I was teaching on tonight. But as I looked at the sheet here that he gave out, and I saw we were going to be singing this, All That Thrills My Soul. Of course, we know we just sang this song, and the chorus goes on, All That Thrills My Soul, All That Brings Me Joy, All That Brings Me Happiness, All That Brings Me Purpose, All That Thrills My Soul is Jesus. And what I thought was unique, and I grabbed it real quick when we were singing the song, and I wasn't singing at first because I was going through and looking at the verses. And it's interesting that the writer of this song, writing a song about all that thrilled his soul was Jesus. Of course, there's a few references to I and me in here, but the majority of the references in here, speaking about Christ, he's saying he, him, his. What thrills his soul? What was the difference? What's the difference between the writer of this song and Solomon? Solomon was thinking about himself. And that's what he was seeking, to find meaning and pleasure in life. It was all about him. The writer of this song had found the secret. All that thrilled his soul was Jesus. When Jesus is the most important thing, when we put him first, when we're seeking him first in our life, it's interesting. It actually was in the passage that we read this morning. We didn't get that far, but in Luke this morning, Luke chapter 12, you get down towards past verse 21, and it makes mention to the same reference in Matthew where it says, seek ye first. Seek him first. And all these things will be added unto you. Now, not necessarily every single desire, every single need or every single want that you may have in your life. But I want to talk about meaning and purpose and what's real. What can really make life worth living. Seek him first. Put him first in your life. Love God. And start living the purpose that he's laid out for your life. And all these things will be added unto you. You want to know real joy? You want to know a real thrill in your life? Seek after Jesus. But the pleasure-seeking person leaves room for no one else but themselves. They love themselves above all things. And that will lead to death. The story is told in Greek mythology of one day, a man known as Narcissus. Narcissus was above all things in love with himself. Nothing else charmed him like himself. One day he came to an open fountain of what was referred to as silvery cleanness. And he walked up to the pool and he looked into the pool and he saw a reflection. And the reflection that he saw, he looked, and the story goes that he thought that it must have been some type of water nymph. So beautiful. And he fell in love with that image and he began to talk to that image. But he received no response. And after some time trying to get that image to respond, he even reached out and reached for an embrace and for a kiss, but nothing reached back to him. And in the end, he was so lost and so broken that he killed himself, unable to attain the object of his desire. And that's where we get our word today of a narcissist. Only concerned about themselves, their desires, in love with themselves. And this pleasure-seeking person, when they put things and themselves, especially, because that's what it comes down to, when they put themselves above all things, they love themselves more than all things. And the result is exactly what we find here in Solomon, coming to the end. And it's worthless. Life isn't even worth living. So the conclusion here, I guess the best way to put it, the best way that we could share with someone if we're trying and we see someone trapped in this, is what has your heart? What has your heart? What's the most important thing? If the heart is the seat of our emotions, if the heart is the seat of who we are, what has our heart? What's the most important thing to us? Is it ourself? Is it me? Am I the most important thing? And everything around me then has to add to my happiness and add to who I am? Is that what it's all about? If that's what it is, the sad truth is I'm going to come someday face to face with a hard truth and reality that the pursuit of that has left me nowhere and with nothing. The pursuit of that has left me dangling, waiting for something and someone to just pull me up and give me real meaning, real truth. But if God has my heart, and if He's the most important, and He's the one who I'm seeking after, very quickly we're going to find, as we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, real truth, real meaning, real joy, the real pleasure in life, when we find that God is the only one who can give that real joy. I'm trying to think back a few about a week ago, Nadia and I was listening to someone speak. They kept talking about happiness, 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 you know, that you got to be happy. And, you know, happiness, the pursuit of it, happiness is a temporary thing, you know, and it has a lot to do with how I feel and experiences that I have. You know, I can be happy right now, but I can walk out that door and someone could say something to me. You know, Pastor, that message wasn't all that good. And all of a sudden, I'm not so happy anymore. Because happiness is based on circumstances. Happenstance. The circumstances around us. And they can change very quickly. Boy, my happiness can change by something that I eat. Simple as that. But true joy, meaning, purpose, all of that, it's something that God gives, that we find in Him. And it doesn't matter what's going on around us. It doesn't matter our circumstances. I could be in the middle of a horrible circumstance and still find joy in Christ. Still find purpose, still find meaning, because it's based on Him. And nothing can change that. Seeking Him first, putting Him first. And when we come to the end of our life, when that's what it's been about, we can truly say, it's been worth it all. It's been worth it all. All the things that God has done and all the things that I've seen Him do, the life that I've lived in Him, it's been worth it all. What did Jim Elliot say? Does anybody know? What's that famous saying that Jim Elliot had? At the end, he said, only what's done for Christ will last. Wasn't that Jim Elliot that said that? Only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. I believe that's Jim Elliot that said that. When you come to the end of life, you can say that. Man, I've lived it for Him. I've experienced real joy that He can give. Hasn't always been roses. But I can truly say, it's not vanity. It's been worth it all. That's the kind of life that I want to live. That's the kind of life that I hope you want to live. That's the kind of life that I want to share with others. I hope that my kids, I hope that your grandkids, that you can share with them. You know, this life that we live now in the world is preaching the exact opposite message. The complete opposite message. That's why we're seeing all these movie stars and singers. And what are they looking for? They're not finding happiness. They're looking for drugs and alcohol and everything else. And they end up coming to the end and it's been worthless. And they end up in tragedies. We see it over and over. We see that played out over and over and over again. They were in the same search as Solomon. Let's search for Christ. Let's seek for Him and put Him first. And we'll see the difference in our life. Let's stand together and let's pray tonight.